The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
The Nicole Sandler Show. Questioning authority daily. And that could be the very reason why YouTube is upset. Hey, YouTube. The music bed you hear beneath my voice is from a broadcast sound library that I paid for and have the receipts. So I've got your copyright violation right here. And now, here's Nicole.
All right. Welcome to a Wednesday. Hello, everybody. I hope, is this thing on? I hope everything sounds okay. I screwed up. You know, here we are, all shut in. We're stuck at home. And, I got ambitious this morning because I was having a few audio issues with my studio setup. And I thought, what the hell? I'll just tweak a couple of things. And I wound up taking it all apart. And then I couldn't put Humpty back together again. So I think I did in like the last 30 minutes. I think I got all the moving parts working again. And of course, this is at a time when I can't just call, you know, a wonderful broadcast engineer and say, hey, can you come over and help me tweak my studio? I have built and rebuilt my studio so many times over the years. I am a one-woman show after all. And, but as they keep tweaking the computers, they make it more difficult and going analog to digital and digital to analog. And, there used to be, you know, an audio input and a different audio output. And then they combine them and so anyway, this is my own personal hell that I made even worse today when I started to pull it apart. See, the thing is, you might recall, I got a new computer after a couple of false starts late last year in 2019. And I was going to give Allison, my daughter, my other computer, but she doesn't want it. My kid is so anti-computer, anti-everything. When she needs to do anything online, she comes in my studio and does it in here anyway. And so I had my other computer in her room and she didn't use it. So I said, you know what, rather than it waste space, I've been overloading this new computer trying to run too many processes at once, which invariably screws me up. So I thought, let me bring that one back in here. I'll have a plethora of computers. I'll have three running, but that's okay because I needed to do this multimedia kind of show that we do. But so I tried to hook up the third computer into the system and I couldn't get it going. So this will be my project for this weekend, along with tweaking the Patreon page that I started to put together. Yes, a number of you have suggested, because I've mentioned, you know, fundraising is not my favorite thing to do, but this program is based on listener donations. The show is not behind a paywall. It is free for anybody who chooses to listen or watch on YouTube. It's here. You can get the podcast, and the podcasts go back 15 years or more. And it's all available because, look, I know what it's like to be hurting financially. I don't have money to spend on a subscription to a podcast to be able to listen, especially in a time like this when we're all hurting and we need things to entertain us. So the day Air America Radio went off the air and I moved this show online 10 years now and 2 months ago, I made the decision to follow the public radio model. And to say, you know, hey, it's free for everyone to listen. Just like you can turn on the radio and listen, you can turn it on NicoleSandler.com, go to my podcast page, anything, and listen. And if you like what you hear and you can afford it, and that's the hard part, please pitch in. You can do a one-time donation. You can do a monthly ongoing subscription. And again, some people said, why don't you have a Patreon account? So basically what Patreon is, it's a way that you can patronize creative people whose work you like. So it's just another look. I have two modes of donation through my page, through NicoleSandler.com. You can donate using PayPal, which I know a lot of people hate, I understand, or you can donate using Stripe, which is another one of these online money transferring things. Patreon that I set up, by the way, in case you were wondering, uses Stripe as well. And I'm not offering anything to the Patreon people that I'm not offering the subscribers through the other channels. So once I launch the page, and it's just, it hasn't been officially launched yet, if you want to go see what it looks like right now, it's at patreon.com/Nicole Sandler Show. I think it's live. I just haven't put it out there for the world to see. So I'm offering the usual things, you know, for a $5 a month donation, basically you get access to not only the live shows, but all the archives, as everybody does, and bonus shows. I promise I will start doing some extra show each week, at least one each week. Could be something from my music days. It could be something new. It's just, it'll be whatever it is. And I'll put those out once a week, and those will go to people who donate. And if you donate through Patreon or through Stripe, or I got to figure out the PayPal thing, but we'll make it work. Make it work. But if you want to, you know, if you donate another way and want to transfer it over to Patreon, you can. I made another level at $10 a month. I don't recall, you know, I just set it up for the very beginning. It's not live yet. So, and then I did another one for $25 a month that gets a handy little Nicole Sandler Show knot pocket. That's one of these things. You see, for those of you watching on YouTube, I'm holding up my phone, and it's got one of those silicone pockets on the back of it. It sticks onto the back of your phone, and it's like a wallet. I put credit cards, money, and my driver's license in it. So when I leave the house, I don't always have to take a purse with me. I have my phone. You can stick a key in here too, because it's flexible. So anyway, for a $25 monthly donation, I think I asked you, you can get one of these Nicole Sandler Show knot pockets. And it's called a knot pocket because it used to be a radio or knot pocket. Anyway, just left over from the old days. And then I made a $50 a month level. And this is more to try to light a fire under my ass to do something. I tell stories all the time about my days, my years in radio, and so much. Look, today, for instance, we're going to talk to somebody, a journalist who writes for The Guardian, and in this case, The Nation, about Andrew Cuomo. Andrew Cuomo, governor of New York, who is getting all kinds of accolades for the way he's handling the coronavirus crisis in New York. And you know what? New York is having troubles. And what we're going to learn today may make you say, wait a minute, Andrew Cuomo kind of, he's got something to do with the fact that it's so out of control in New York right now. But what has captured the imagination of so many Americans is the disparity, the contrast, if you will, between Andrew Cuomo when he gets up to do one of his press briefings and the Orange Menace when he gets up. Andrew Cuomo, one, is smart. Two, knows his shit. Three, is in charge. And he speaks with an air of authority and knowledge and deference to the experts. And you just feel good knowing someone like that is in charge. We'll leave that there right now. And then you look at Trump, and every time he opens his mouth, you're embarrassed. I was in the car with my kid the other day. We ran out to pick up dinner. I didn't get out of the car. And one of Trump's, you know, his reality show briefing sessions was on. And he's going off on who knows what it was. But I was alternating between going, I can't fucking believe this guy, and laughing. I mean, you laugh at him because he is such a fucking moron who doesn't have a clue what he's talking about. So, you know, when you see these two disparate entities, Donald Trump and Andrew Cuomo, it's realistic that people would say, wow, Andrew Cuomo, that's what a leader looks like. Anyway, so, you know, while Andrew Cuomo is getting all these accolades, of course, I go through my old files, and I come across this picture. For those of you watching on YouTube, you'll see it. From 1980, I believe this was 85. And it's a picture of me at WMCA Radio, Good Guy Radio in New York City. And I'm standing right next to then Governor Mario Cuomo. He's behind the microphone in the studio because I produced a monthly New York statewide call-in show, Ask the Governor. And this photo is even signed. It says, Nicole, thanks for all your good help. Mario Cuomo, 41885. So again, I have these stories. And people say to me all the time, you should write a book. So back to my Patreon thing. So for the $50 a month level, not that I expect many people to take me up on it, I will share with you my writing in progress. I am going to start writing down some of the stories behind these pictures, like the picture with Mario Cuomo. I've got a couple of Mario Cuomo stories. I've done so many music interviews. I mean, if you look behind me on the wall, it's hard to make out what the pictures are. But there's Alanis Morissette, there's Lyle Lovett, there's Jackson Brown, there's Chris Isaak, there's Michael Hutchence, there's Yoko Ono, James Taylor, Pete Townsend, Warren Zevon. I mean, so I've interviewed a lot of people, and along with those interviews that I put out from time to time, I have stories too. So I thought I'd write my own multimedia book. Words and music and stories and air checks and all kinds of stuff, and make it a work in progress. So anybody who wants to get in on that and donate $50 a month, you will have access to the ongoing writing, as such as it is. I've gotten about 2 pages done so far. So that's where we are. I'm trying new things because we got to get creative in our shut-in days, you know? Yeah, you know. All right. As we, you know, we like to do, we like to start things off with a bit of a funny. This is a video that I found online. And I got to say, yes, I find a lot of these. I don't mean to steal anyone's thunder. A lot of the funny videos I'm playing have been sent to me by listeners. And for those of you who send me these things, thank you so much. I mean, I find a lot of them on my own, but you guys have sent me some great stuff. And I apologize if I don't give credit where credit is due. I get so much email and so many of you send me comedy bits that I can't keep it all straight. So I think yesterday I said I came across this one online and the listener who sent it to me got really mad at me. Way to give me credit, Nicole. I'm sorry. So this came to me. I don't know if I found it or someone sent it to me. I don't remember. Either way, it's funny. And right now, we could use a laugh or two. So.
Yesterday, I could drive around to any place. And I could shake your hand or touch my face. And I had Purell yesterday. Suddenly, I bought way, way too much rice and beans. Uh-huh. And toilet paper's now a currency. And we're all social distancing. Where I like to go, I don't know. I couldn't say. Binge watched every show, 'cause stores have closed since yesterday. Yesterday. All my kids could go outside and play. Now I'm their teacher and don't know what to say. Public school just yesterday. Where I like to go, I don't know, I couldn't say. All my foods run out, I'm not proud, made it just one day. Yesterday. Everything was basically the same. Wasting time on my phone most of the day. But now I see we're all insane. No more Purell as of today. Seriously, go wash your hands.
Seriously, go wash your hands. All right, so that one worked. So it must have been a problem with that actual video. And that guy, damn it. You know what? I will post this on my blog at NicoleSandler.com after the show because his name is something like, it's a handle. It's like, damn it. Let me see if I can't find it. I'll tell you what, while I'm looking for it, because I want to share it with you, I hate not giving credit where credit is due. Let me see. Is it on here? Coronavirus yesterday? No, it doesn't have his name on it. Damn it. All right. I will find it. But in the meantime, let's do one more since we had that massive screw up. So one more funny for today before we get into the news. Now for something completely different. Here we go.
Now when a virus comes along that's spreading like a plague, and POTUS and his lackeys have been nothing if not vague, well then you've got to trust the CDC and listen well, unless you want to bid our free society farewell. There is a super bad, transmittable, contagious, awful virus. And if we don't act quick and social distance, it will mire us in a stretch of quarantine that lasts until July. A super bad, transmittable, contagious, awful virus. And if you got a better cough in your arm, and if you got a better cough in your arm. Now back in 1918, influenza had its run, but half their docs were busy overseas with World War I. Today we have mass media and scientists to say, if you don't want this virus, well then stay 6 feet away. Super damn important that we practice isolation, because we're asymptomatic while it's in incubation. We'll overwhelm our hospitals if there's not mitigation. It's super damn important that we practice isolation. If we don't do it, then we're all gonna die. If we don't do it, then we're all gonna die. And so I hope at last you take the lesson here to heart, because it's already scary and we're only at the start. If you get bored, just think of the immunocompromised, who can't go much of anywhere unless it's sterilized. Oh, super bad, transmittable, contagious, awful virus. If we don't act quick and social distance, it will mire us in a stretch of quarantine that lasts until July. A super bad transmittable, a super bad transmittable, a super bad transmittable, contagious, awful virus. Super bad transmittable, contagious, awful virus.
All right. There you go. All right. Gotta do this. My settings are off. Okay, so I found it. Five Times August is the name of the guy who did the Yesterday parody. Yes, Mark Russell. We need Mark Russell on days like this. Of course, we have our friend Lauren Mayer, who's doing some great work. And again, I'm so impressed with all the homemade humor out there. So many people are getting very creative on the interwebs and using their time wisely. All right, so there's some funny for today. Now you're ready for the news? Oh, yes, there's a lot going on. All right, well, I guess we'll do it live. We are going to get our guest on in about 10 minutes or so. So, all right, we'll do it live.
I read the news today. Oh,
while we can, do it live. Here we go.
We'll do it live.
All right, thank you.
Do it live. I'll write it, and we'll do it live.
All right. We'll start. Shut up, Bill. God, I only got so much time here. All right, we'll start with an ode to my state. Oy, Florida.
Oy, Florida.
Yeah, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis today finally issued a stay-at-home order after resisting statewide restrictions. So today, he announced 30-day stay-at-home order that tells the state's nearly 21 million residents to stay indoors unless they're pursuing essential services or activities. It was just yesterday that DeSantis said he had no plans to issue a statewide order because the White House had not told him to do so. Because Ron DeSantis can't think for himself. He is a Donald Trump toady puppet. And so he only does what Donnie tells him to do. Ugh. Meanwhile, the Trump administration has released its new guidelines for social distancing and projections for the spread of the coronavirus. And it's alarming. They're predicting the United States could lose 100 to 240,000 patients. The CDC now says that as many as 1/4 of those infected with the virus could be walking around with no symptoms But they're contagious anyway, so they're still transmitting it, which makes social distancing measures all the more crucial. This growing public concern has led China to start counting asymptomatic cases in its official tally, although today we're hearing that we don't necessarily believe China's numbers they've released on how many were infected and all that stuff. But, you know, such as it is, there are now more than 860,000 coronavirus cases worldwide, and more than 42,000 people have died. Now, here in the U.S., the death toll has jumped above 4,000, surpassing that of China, as well, what we know anyway. For the first time, more than 700 people died in the U.S. in one day. Those numbers are just going to keep going up. The total number of infections in the country reached nearly 190,000. Donald Trump urged Americans to diligently practice social distancing, extending his stay-at-home guidelines through the end of April. And he warned that the crisis will worsen. What a difference from the idiot who, you know, less than a month ago was still saying, we got this all under control.
We pretty much shut it down coming in from China.
Hey, Donald, today's April 1st. Isn't this going to end in April?
You know, in April, supposedly, it dies with the hotter weather.
Oh, really?
When it gets warm. Historically, that has been able to kill the virus.
Has it? It's warm here, but people are still getting sick.
People are getting better.
Oh,
they're
really?
Getting better.
Huh.
And
huh?
The 15 within a couple of days is going to be down to close to zero.
Really? That was on February 26. How'd that work out for him? Yeah, so Trump said, this is going to be pretty painful.
Because you're talking about a potential of up to 2.2 million, and some people said it could even be higher than that. So you're talking about 2.2 million deaths. 2.2 million people from this.
From this.
And so if we could hold that down, as we're saying, to 100,000, it's a horrible number.
Hold it down to 100,000?
Maybe even less, but to 100,000. So we have between 100 and 200,000.
What?
We all together have done a very good job.
So seriously, the man who for weeks told us, it's all under control. What is that?
We think we have it very well under control.
All under control. And the 15 positive cases in New York pretty much would soon be down to zero, right?
And the 15 within a couple of days is going to be down to close to zero.
So that same guy is now saying that if only 100,000 people die, that proves he's done a good job? You see what the choices are? You laugh. Or you cry.
Everything you thought you knew, you never knew it all. Sideways is straight ahead. Facts no longer matter. Reality is now fiction. There's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, opposite world.
Yeah. Hey, so as the onset and rapid spread of the coronavirus has crippled the world, it's also causing a lot of economic anxiety here in the U.S., where, unlike every other industrialized nation on the planet, healthcare is not considered a basic human right. And with so many millions of people uninsured, the administration reportedly considered allowing a special open enrollment period to allow people to get insurance through the Affordable Care Act, you know, Obamacare. Don't have a heart attack. Trump and his brilliant advisors decided against it. So if you get sick, good luck with that. Sickening, sickening, sickening. By the way, Donald Trump bragging about the best economy ever. Well, stocks fell again yesterday, capping their worst first quarter since the 2008 financial crisis. The S&P 500 finished the first 3 months of the year down by 20%, its worst first quarter ever. The Dow Jones Industrial Average down by 23% since the first of the year, its worst quarterly decline since 1987. And in case you're wondering where it stands right now, whoops, right now at 3:28 p.m., on April 1st, the Dow is down 1,007 points, standing at 20,910, just in case you're wondering. So, hey, you know, if this were the end of the world as we know it, at least according to REM, it would have started with an earthquake. Wow. A magnitude 6.5 trembler struck north of Boise, Idaho last night. I found out about it by seeing friends on Twitter in California going on an earthquake on top of it all. Well, in California, Southern California, they felt it at about a 3, but 6.5 in Idaho, and more than 2 million people felt it from Helena, Montana, Salt Lake City, and again, all over California. And yes, today is April Fool's Day, and April Fool's Day should be canceled this year. Just saying. No, this is already a big enough joke being played on us by the universe. We really don't need any little stupid jokes today. But it is also Census Day in the U.S., so please complete and return your census forms. You should have gotten a card in the mail that would give you a number, like a code number to log on to. I think it's census.gov. You put in that number and it brings you up and you fill it out and it takes all of 5 minutes. So it's really, really easy. I did it, done the day the thing came in. It was a week or so ago already. Now participation in the census is required by law, but there are other reasons to comply. Census numbers determine how many representatives each state gets in Congress and how billions of dollars in federal funding gets spent. Schools, roads, and other crucial community components will gain or lose money over the next 10 years, depending on this official population tally. And this year, this is also the first time you can complete it online. And if you don't do it, you'll get a visit from a census taker later in the year who will then want to interview you and make sure everyone's counted. So don't do that. Don't put them in danger. Do it now online. It's fast and easy and oh so important. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. All right. I mentioned we have a guest coming up. This is a new guest for me. This is somebody that I have not spoken with before. In fact, let's get Ross Barkin on the line. And Ross Barkin is a journalist. He is a columnist for The Guardian and a contributor to a number of other publications, including The Nation, where he's got a new piece up, featured piece titled "Cuomo Helped Get New York Into This Mess." The governor's position on healthcare spending looked starkly different a couple of months ago. And, it's still ringing. I hope I dialed it right. Let me just make sure because, you know, you never know. Okay, it looks like I dialed it right. Okay, now it's ringing. So I think, hopefully, Ross Barkin is coming. One ringy dingy.
Hello.
Hey, Ross, it's Nicole Sandler calling. How you doing?
Yes.
Yes, we are live on the air. Thank you so much for joining me. I was just telling the listeners.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm doing well.
Good. You staying safe? You in New York?
Yes. Staying safe. Doing okay despite everything. just trying to get through it day to day, doing my best.
Aren't we all? It's so weird. I've been talking about so many things are so few things are universal. You know, they all say, well, death and taxes. And I throw sex in there because at some point most adults at least have that shared experience. But this is something we're all experiencing together all over the planet in real time. And I don't know that we've ever had any kind of sorry to sound so ethereal, but like cosmic gathering like this before, where we're all dealing with the same shit. Right? Everywhere in the world. So it's on some level, someone's got to do a study on that and how the collective brain waves come together or something. I don't know. I think being shut in is playing games with my mind. Anyway. Ross Barkin, you've got a piece up at The Nation, thenation.com right now, and the headline reads, Cuomo helped get New York into this mess, and then the subtitle says, the governor's position on healthcare spending looked starkly different a couple of months ago. And I'm glad you wrote this piece because I really wanted to touch on this. I live in South Florida now, but I was born in New York, and after college, I moved back to New York. Where I did radio. I've done radio my whole adult life. And actually, when I was a wee child, back probably before you were born, I worked at WMCA Radio in New York, back when it was the good guys. It was talk. It was before there was right-wing and progressive talk. It was just talk. And I produced this statewide monthly statewide call and radio show with then Governor Mario Cuomo. And I'm putting up on YouTube a picture of me and then Governor Cuomo back in 1985, I believe. And I got to tell you, I adored Mario Cuomo. And he actually offered me a job, but in his press office, but it would have required me moving to Albany. And I was, you know, 22 years old living in New York City, and I did not want to go to Albany. So I said no, which, you know, many years I've regretted. But that said, I really had a soft spot in my heart for Mario Cuomo. I thought he was a great governor and just an amazingly nice, wonderful man. I wanted him to run for president, as did many other people. He never did. There was that time he was going to get on the plane. He never did. That's a story for another day. Here we are. It's 2020. Mario Cuomo, sadly, is long gone. Andrew Cuomo is the governor of New York. And what I've said over the years from afar is, yeah, Andrew Cuomo, he's no Mario. But people are watching him. And the last few weeks, Andrew Cuomo has gotten up and taken command of those briefings and the state of New York dealing with a horrific crisis, as is the rest of the world. And he's showing, he's proving himself to be a leader and in charge and smart and eloquent and somebody who sounds like he knows what the hell he's talking about. And because we are, I think, have been subject to this orange menace for the last 3.5 years, it's such a stark contrast that people are already elevating Andrew Cuomo to, oh my God, he should be the Democratic nominee. And there are those of us who have known about Andrew Cuomo who say, no, no, not so fast. Yeah, he's doing this okay, but no, you need to know more about Andrew Cuomo. So, Ross Barkin, is that why you decided to write this piece for The Nation?
Well, I wanted to write the piece because I really want to focus on a particular area that Andrew Cuomo was getting a lot of praise for, which was his response to COVID-19, and particularly dealing with this healthcare crisis.
Right.
And the fact is that rather than bolster New York City's hospitals, he's actually trying to cut Medicaid funding to them. But there's definitely the larger question of who is Andrew Cuomo. And I've covered him and written about him for a long time since his first term. You know, he's now been governor of New York for almost a decade.
Wow.
And he'll probably be governor for a while longer since we don't have term limits. And he's a complicated figure. But as someone who's covered him for a long time, you know, I can say, or I would argue, I should say, that a lot of the praise coming his way is quite frankly not warranted. He hasn't responded to the coronavirus crisis any better than other governors or other executives in major states like Washington, mm-hmm. or California or Ohio or Michigan. And quite frankly, in some ways, he's performed worse. And I can get into that. So I really believe that the praise and the plaudits he's gotten from the media and from regular people for his performance at these press conferences is really an example of style over substance.
Absolutely.
And on the substance, New York has lagged. And we are the epicenter of this crisis for a reason. Part of it is out of our control, but part of it is poor political leadership from the mayor of New York City, Bill de Blasio,
mm-hmm.
and from Governor Cuomo, who has not responded much better when it comes to actually preparing us to deal with this pandemic.
Wow. So, you know, what you said, though, Ross, this is the thing. It's the sort of the specter of low, a very low bar, a bar set so low because we've spent the last 3.5 years listening to the ramblings of an insane man in Donald Trump. So that when someone who with a modicum of intelligence And who's articulate, who can get up and speak extemporaneously without notes and sound intelligent, we all of a sudden go, oh, my God, there's an adult. Wow, that's somebody we can look up to, because the comparison that we've been living with and still are on a daily basis. That said, there's really an interesting dynamic going on now, because New York was not the first city to get hit in the United States by COVID-19. That happened on the West Coast. It happened in Washington State, where Jay Inslee, the governor, is actually doing a great job, not quite as spotlight stealing, perhaps, as Andrew Cuomo. But somehow he's managed to I don't know if it's from the social distancing or the restrictions that he laid down right at the beginning, but they've been able to maybe flatten the curve a bit in Washington state, and the same with California. By all rights, California should be well past New York in terms of infections, but even in California, it's slowed down. But New York is, if you look at the charts, it's almost a straight line up. This is a problem of leadership, isn't it?
It is. And the facts don't lie. Certainly, New York has done a lot of testing, and New York City is incredibly dense. And these two factors do drive the number of cases. At the same time, for over a week now, New York's leaders, Governor Cuomo and Mayor de Blasio, have urged people not to get tested because they don't have the capacity to do it anymore. And they need to reserve that kind of medical equipment for people who are seriously ill. But I think you're right. You look at Jay Inslee in Washington and Gavin Newsom in California, and you see really effective leadership. They both put in so-called shelter-in-place orders before New York. You know, remarkably, in early March, Gavin Newsom was already talking about this at a time when Governor Cuomo was actually downplaying the crisis.
Wow.
Governors in Ohio and Michigan shut public schools statewide before New York did. We actually were lagging days behind most other major states dealing with this crisis.
I remember that.
And this was particularly fatal because we have a lot of people and we're very dense. So Governor Cuomo has gotten a lot of credit for moving decisively, but on the major policy decisions that one could make, he was behind, and we didn't get a shelter in place order until after California did. We actually got it many days, almost a week after, and in part that was because the mayor of New York City, Bill de Blasio, suggested it first, and Governor Cuomo and Bill de Blasio have a very bad relationship, and Cuomo doesn't like to cede any ground to him. So certainly Bill de Blasio has failed tremendously to reckon with this crisis, and it really should besmirch his legacy. But the truth is, or the irony is, that this pandemic should really damage Cuomo's legacy, not elevate him. To me, it reminds me of 9/11 when Rudy Giuliani got a lot of credit for guiding the city out of the crisis. But there wasn't really much he did in particular. It was more of a reassuring style that he had. And there were even strategic mistakes he made, like putting the emergency headquarters in the World Trade Center after the first bombing, which people told him not to do. So I see some Giuliani-Cuomo parallels here.
I see them as well. You know, right now, as we're dealing with, obviously, a health crisis in America, we have a bigger crisis, and that is our health care industry. The fact that it is a for-profit enterprise is just mind-blowing. I mean, we here in the United States, we grew up with it, so most of us don't know any better. But you talk to anyone from pretty much any other civilized nation on the planet, and they hear about our premiums and copays and deductibles and out-of-pocket expenses, and they're perplexed. They don't understand it. So in most other countries, you get the coronavirus, you go, you get treated, you get taken care of because it's a basic human right. Here in the United States, that's not the case. And it was very disconcerting for me to hear the other night Joe Biden in an interview say, when asked, well, are you rethinking your position on Medicare for all now? He said, no, that wouldn't fix this. That too is a story for another day, but wrong is the answer there. But then you have Andrew Cuomo, who has been working for years, according to your story and others that I've read, in trying to make massive cuts to the Medicaid budget in New York. Now, with the Affordable Care Act, New York did indeed expand Medicaid. But Andrew Cuomo, for the better part of 10 years now, has been working on cutting the numbers for Medicaid, on cutting financing for hospitals, on doing everything the opposite of what's needed now. And in fact, the subtitle for your piece up at The Nation, Ross, reads, the governor's position on healthcare spending looked starkly different a couple of months ago. Tell us what Andrew Cuomo's program for healthcare in New York has been? What are his aspirations there?
Sure. So Medicaid spending in New York has increased. I mean, that's inarguable. But Andrew Cuomo has really, whenever he could, tried to cut it. Mm. He's actually created two different Medicaid redesign teams, they're called, to cut reimbursements to Medicaid. He did one in 2011 when he first became governor, and then he did one this year, another one to also cut Medicaid spending. So this is something that he's been interested in doing, despite the increases in Medicaid spending in New York, which in part has to do with the Affordable Care Act. So New York also has lost a lot of hospital beds. Over 20 years, there have been about 20,000 beds lost. Some of those are before Cuomo was governor. You know, this started in the 2000s. He's elected, became governor in 2011. Mm-hmm. So not all of the burden falls on his shoulders, but he has empowered many of the same bureaucrats who supported these hospital closures very aggressively in the 2000s. You know, his first Medicaid redesign team, for example, included a man named Steven Berger, an investment banker who chaired a commission that specifically recommended hospital closures in the 2000s. And many of the hospitals that were recommended to close did in fact close, and Cuomo himself has rubber-stamped hospital closures. So, you know, he's been someone who has attempted to rein in or cut or slash healthcare spending. Now, he hasn't always been successful at doing that, but it's always been an attempt of his. What's very striking now in this particular moment is that he's going through with these proposed Medicaid cuts, even though New York is in the middle of the worst pandemic in 100 years, without exaggeration. So you're talking about a governor who wants to cut over a few years about $2.5 billion for Medicaid. He wants to cut $400 million this year. And the real problem with that is the money that is being cut to hospitals in New York City. These are public hospitals, cash-strapped hospitals that are going to take hits in the millions of dollars if the cuts go through. And you're seeing a lot of alarm from nurses, from doctors, from healthcare providers, from elected officials, from Democrats. There's really this united wall to crying these cuts. And Cuomo, at least as of now, has been adamant that these cuts must go through. He's even rejecting federal matching funds for Medicaid because those matching funds in part require that he not make these Medicaid cuts and not change the program in New York. It's really striking to see a governor who is so committed to particular aims, even during a crisis like this one. And for those who have followed or know Andrew Cuomo, that really isn't that surprising. This is his MO. He's a very single-minded person. And once he has an idea of how things should be done, he will do them. And there are times when that's really to the detriment of the poor and the working class in New York State.
We're speaking with Ross Barkin. He's a journalist. He writes a regular column for The Guardian. He's a contributor to The Nation and others. The Nation is where this article that we're discussing is at right now. Cuomo helped get New York into this mess. You know, I haven't lived in New York in a few decades. So my, I pay attention, but not as closely as I do to, for instance, the idiot governor we have down here in Florida, who just today decided to, you know, put a shelter in place directive. So we have been staying at home, but, you know, Ron DeSantis was waiting for Donald to tell him personally to do it. Anyway, I do recall, though, it was 2018 when Andrew Cuomo was up for re-election and he was challenged by none other than Cynthia Nixon, an actress, but a progressive who challenged him on a number of levels. And one thing that she publicized that I wasn't aware of at the time was this weird makeup of, I guess it's in the New York State Assembly, where a group known as the Independent Democratic Senators.
State Senate.
Can you explain what this was about? Because this, yes. Andrew Cuomo's allegedly a Democrat, and the Democrats ostensibly had control of the New York State Legislature, but they didn't act that way. I'm guessing it all stems from this.
Yeah, so for all the listeners who are crushing on Andrew Cuomo, the listeners who are good Democrats or good progressives or see themselves that way and see Andrew Cuomo as a guiding light to the Democratic Party in the 21st century, they should know that for most of Andrew Cuomo's tenure, the state Senate in New York was controlled by Republicans and not Democrats. And that was not an accident. It's not as if New York has a vast treasure trove of secret Republican voters. It's not as if there is a great hidden Republican wave. It's a Democratic state. We voted Democrat for every president since 1984. But Republicans have controlled the state Senate. They did for a very long time, and they did with Andrew Cuomo's blessing. And that was in part because the state Senate lines were gerrymandered and Cuomo approved those lines. And that was in part, and this is where we get to the Independent Democratic Conference, that when Republicans were going to lose their majority finally, and you go back to 2012 and this actually happened, instead of the Democrats taking control, this group of independent Democrats, their own third conference, formed a governing coalition with the Republicans. And they did this with Andrew Cuomo's tacit support. Cuomo himself would never come out and say, I want the Republican majority. He was too smart for that. But he would never say, we must elect a Democratic majority. And behind the scenes, he was very supportive of the Republican majority and this independent Democratic conference. And it wasn't until 2018 that the 6 out of the 8 members of this IDC were primaried and defeated, and the Republicans lost their majority, and Democrats finally took control of the state Senate just last year. And there's been a host of progressive measures passed because the state Senate is now in Democratic hands. And the short moral for this tale, or the lesson, is that Andrew Cuomo, the Democratic governor of New York, wanted the Republicans to control the state Senate because he is not terribly progressive himself, and he prefers to pose as one, but in fact govern as a fiscal moderate or centrist and a social liberal, while frustrating progressives who really want to move the state further to the left. So it's a very unique situation. Most Democratic governors want Democratic legislatures, whether it's in Washington, whether it's in California, whether, you know, to any other blue state. But New York's a funky place, and in part that's because of Andrew Cuomo's strong past support for state Senate Republicans.
Wow. And see, these are things that most people don't know. I'm looking at a picture of you, Ross Barkin, and you do look very young. I'm guessing you were not around when Mario Cuomo was governor, no?
No, I was very young. No, when he was defeated, I was a small child.
But my memories of him are correct, right? I mean, he was a progressive. He was probably the last great liberal governor of New York.
Yes, because we had 3 terms of Republican and George Pataki. We had Eliot Spitzer, who actually could have been a very liberal governor of New York, but his tenure was cut short by a prostitution scandal. So
yes, it was.
We went from Spitzer very briefly, his lieutenant governor, David Patterson, and then to Cuomo. And we've been with Cuomo since 2011. So, yes, I mean, Mario Cuomo certainly rhetorically was much more liberal than Andrew Cuomo. He himself was also fairly tolerant of the Republicans in the state Senate. But certainly he was interested in moving the party more to the left, whereas Cuomo has always called himself a pragmatic progressive, which is code word for I'm left, but I'm not that left,
right.
And I don't want to go that left. And if I do, you've got to drag me there.
Yeah, exactly. Well, for those who are, you know, there are people saying, oh, we need to draft Andrew Cuomo. And so I'm happy to share the information. It's like, just because somebody does one thing well, and in his case, it's getting up before the cameras and appearing commanding and in charge. And because of what we have in Washington, that's a drastic contrast to Trump. And so people are going, that's what we need, an adult in the room. But, you know, people are also too quick to fall in love, as you put it. And this is not the guy that progressives want to fall in love with. Now, I think we are also in a bit of a dilemma because Joe Biden isn't either. And I think with each passing day, he's making himself less and less of a a force to be reckoned with, if you will. He's showing that he's the wrong person for the Democrats to put up there. So I think a lot of people are grasping, oh, my God, what are we going to do? Do you have any thoughts on that, Ross?
I do. I think people need to understand that Andrew Cuomo himself, despite this surge of popularity and ability to appear commanding on television, has actually not been a terribly successful retail politician or interested retail politician in his time in New York. I mean, Joe Biden, for all his flaws, has been able to, you know, forge real connections with voters. Andrew Cuomo in New York until really now has never been terribly popular. I mean, his approval rating was in the low 40s before coronavirus. Now it's shot up to 70%. So he's not someone who is, you know, an Obama-like figure. He's not naturally compelling. He's rarely traveled outside of New York State. He's really avoided the sort of press the flesh campaigning that presidential candidates have to do, particularly in certain states. Most of his campaigns have really been run with him being able to raise far more money than his competitors. New York has very bad campaign finance laws. And so just to give you an example, Andrew Cuomo spent almost $30 million in the primary against Cynthia Nixon in 2018.
Wow.
Cynthia Nixon spent about $2 million.
Wow.
So the disparity was enormous. And Cuomo has really never been in a competitive election before, you know, even his, you know, his wins over token Republicans and things like that. So I think, you know, Joe Biden's very flawed. That being said, by the time November comes around, most people are going to be thinking about beating Donald Trump, and that's going to be the occupation for most Democrats. So I think Biden has a shot and can do it. He's in a tough place right now because he can't campaign, and he doesn't have an elected office. So Cuomo can speak in front of the media every day for a purpose. Even Bernie Sanders can. He's a United States senator.
Yep.
Joe Biden is nothing right now.
Right.
That makes it hard for him.
It does. Well, and just so, you know, if anybody's worrying now after hearing you that Andrew Cuomo might try to, you know, worm his way in there, his brother, Chris Cuomo, who is on CNN, who, by the way, yesterday announced he has tested positive for the coronavirus, interviewed him and asked him, and I'm going to play this clip. It's like 40 seconds, but you'll hear it's like, I think Chris Cuomo wants it more than Andrew does.
With all of this adulation that you're getting for doing your job, are you thinking about running for president? Tell the audience.
No. No.
No, you won't answer?
No, I answered. The answer is no.
No, you're not thinking about
it? Sometimes it's one word. I said no.
Have you thought about it?
No.
Are you open to thinking about it?
No.
Might you think about it at some point?
This is ridiculous.
No.
How can you know what you might think about at some point right now?
Because I know what I might think about and what I won't think about. But you're a great interviewer, by the way.
Appreciate it. Learn from the best.
So, yeah, a little brotherly love there. So it sounds like Andrew Cuomo is not interested in running for president. But, you know, good. So maybe we move on from there.
Yeah, it doesn't really make sense. And then Joe Biden has accumulated the most delegates, and these delegates aren't going to suddenly turn around and pledge themselves to someone else who hasn't run in any races. So it's just not really plausible.
Well,
now. It's not going to happen, put it that way, at least
that's
in
true.
2020.
But Ross Barkin, let me throw a curveball at you in the last 2 minutes of the interview. There are new allegations from a former Joe Biden staffer of a sexual assault that she says happened back in the 90s, that she says she's been trying to get some of the organizations like the National Women's Law Council, I think they're called, or Time's Up, all the Me Too people, and nobody would listen to her. Nobody would tell her story, and she's been blacked out by the corporate media. Katie Helper interviewed her, and Crystal Ball interviewed her, but the corporate, the cable news channels are not talking to her. They're not mentioning this. Isn't this a huge disconnect from Joe Biden himself, who says you've got to listen to the women?
It is, no, and there's no doubt, you know, whether it's Joe Biden or Bill Clinton, or Donald Trump. You know, these are men who come from different eras and who've undoubtedly interacted with women in very inappropriate ways. Unfortunately, it doesn't seem to be making a dent, in part perhaps because the mainstream media has taken less interest. You also just have the fact of coronavirus, which is so dominating the news, it makes any other scandal impossible to permeate. Perhaps if there had been no pandemic, this is the kind of scandal that could have damaged the campaign more. But it's just such a strange time right now, and it's almost as if, you know, nothing can get through. So I think that's part of it. And obviously, traditional cable networks haven't amplified it, so that's notable as well.
Right. The machine doesn't want it amplified.
I guess just in terms of looking at it through the lens of Joe Biden as a presidential candidate, it seems like he will weather the storm. Of course, from a moral perspective, these are very disturbing allegations, and they should be taken seriously.
Without a doubt. And they need to be addressed. And the fact that the corporate media and these groups that have popped up since the Me Too movement began won't deal with it. And I've read some of the, you know, there are some holes in the story and there are some things that just don't jive. Well, then talk about them. But you can't, by ignoring it, it's not going to go away. And just because the Democrats don't talk about it doesn't mean the Republicans won't. If you think Trump is, you know, not going to talk about this and only will talk about Hunter Biden, I think you got another, you know, thing coming. They're going to be all over this. And the Democrats are going to be standing there with their proverbial dick in their hands again. It's just upsetting to me because this is another, you know, example of the Democrats staring victory in the eyes and snatching defeat away from it. My fear.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah. So Ross Barkin, the website is rossbarkin.com. You're on Twitter at Ross Barkin. The story is up at The Nation. I will link to it. You also have a book out. What's the book about?
It's a novel. It's called Demolition Night. It's a science, sort of a work of literary fiction with some dystopian science fiction elements. Came out a few years ago, sort of a satire of our tech age and corporate dominance of the world. So I urge people to check it out.
All right. And you can find all about it at rossbarkin.com. Thank you so much, Ross. It was nice to talk with you. I appreciate all the info on Andrew Cuomo, and stay safe.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Take care. Bye-bye. And with that, we are done for today. All right. Stay safe, everyone. Tomorrow it's Thursday. Howie Klein will be here. And who knows what else the day will bring us. You never know. We'll figure it out together. I'll leave you with one more song. Here's Bill Mumy.
Well, hello, people. What a crazy scene. Here we all are in quarantine. Let's not go crazy. Let's do what's best. Try taking deep breaths. Get lots of rest. 'Cause we're social distancing now. But someday soon, I hope, we'll be dancing together again. In the meantime, wash with lots of soap. Don't be cranky, don't freak out. Cough into a hanky, try not to pout. 'Cause we're social distancing now. But someday soon, I hope, we'll be dancing together again. Meanwhile, wash with lots of soap. Catch up on reading. Watch TV, maybe Lost in Space, featuring me. Listen to some music, yoga's good. Stay hydrated like you always should. Because we're social distancing now. But someday soon, I hope, we'll be dancing together again. Meanwhile,
wash with lots of soap. One of these weeks, months or days, things will go back to normal crazy ways. Then something new will